Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lincoln on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news relating to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Mortgage Banking Solutions. Whether you need a new warehouse line, hedging, or are interested in making the transition from broker to banker, Mortgage Banking Solutions' primary focus is to enable executives to take their business to the next level. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here is your host of Lincoln on Lending, David Lincoln.
Welcome, everybody. This is David Lincoln. It is March 22nd. Hey. Day after health care was passed, wherever you may stand on that issue, it's got a lot of people focused on their television last night, and a lot of people interested where this is going to go. This week, we have as a special focus, we're continuing with our special focus on hedging, going from best efforts to mandatory, what that means, and hedging's a big part of that. We had a guest last week. This week, we're honored to have another industry leader, Bruce Carr, will be joining us later in the program. We're excited about that. But as we do each week, let's head off and start with an update on what's going on with interest rates. Joe Farr of MBS Quoteline is with us again this week, and we appreciate you, Joe, being a part of this every week. What's going on in the world of interest rates?
Well, I'm pleased to report that things are good this morning.
It's good. We like that report.
Yeah. MBS prices, Fannie Mae MBS are up about 7. Ginnies and Freddies are up a little bit more than that even. And, you know, that's as compared to earlier in the day when they were flat to up a little bit. And, in fact, we've seen a few investors issue favorable price changes today. So that's always
good.
A good thing. As everyone knows, MBS prices being up means mortgage rates are down. So it's, we'd like seeing that. No real direction today. I mean, there was no economic events announced today. There's a little bit of chatter about Greece, and we had the bill auctions this morning. Good to see they're up. Last week, you know, it's been about 3 weeks in a row that we've seen some intra-week volatility, but from week to week to week, it's been pretty flat. Which is, you know, as we're going to talk about hedging here in a little bit, volatility is tough to hedge, and so it's kind of nice when you don't see that for a while. Last week, we had a big week for economic announcements. The Fed meeting statement was released on Tuesday afternoon, pretty much as anticipated, where the Fed said that the economic environment is a little better than it was in the last statement, and did reiterate that they saw improvement, but on a slow basis. And they made no change in rates, obviously, and made no change in their statement regarding the MBS purchase program. $10 billion was bought last week. Leaves only $14 billion to go. So, you know, we're all anxiously awaiting that that end of program. As we've talked about in shows prior, it's looking more and more like it's not going to be a big issue in the mortgage market. But that'll be interesting to see come middle of next week. Also last week, we saw a couple of the key inflation measures. As everyone knows, inflation, the higher inflation or the higher the risk of concern for inflation, the higher mortgage rates go. Last week, both PPI and CPI came out up only 0.1% for the month. Those were core CPI and PPI. Core CPI, which is the most important of the measures, was up only 1.3% year over year. So well within what the Fed sort of targets as acceptable inflation, say between 1.5 and 2. So even below that. And, you know, that's good for mortgage markets in that it is a very low inflation. And not one that, and with the economy not growing too quickly, near term anyway, doesn't appear to be a big risk.
That is encouraging.
Yeah, also last week, Dave, there were kind of better than expected economic announcements for the in the manufacturing world. The New York Empire State Index came in a little better than expected, as did the Philly mm-hmm. Fed. So, you know, there are signs, and as the Fed did in their statement, said it appears as though things are improving, but ever so slightly.
And is it a sustainable improvement? That's going to be the big question. But as far as this week, not as busy, it sounds like.
No, it's not. We've got some housing data. New home sales and existing home sales come out this week. Existing on Tuesday, new home sales on Wednesday. Durable orders is sometimes a big announcement. It is an indication of activity in the assets or items lasting more than 3 years, I think is how it's described. And that comes out on Wednesday. Big thing this week, as with every other week, it seems, are the Treasury auctions. These are on the shorter end of the auctions, the 2, 5, and 7 years. But it is $128 billion they're going to be auctioning this week. So
a lot of money.
Yeah, each of those auctions happen Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, respectively. And like I mentioned before, next week we'll finish with us being just a few days away from the end of the MBS purchase program.
You know, we had a good discussion last week with Tom Milan on, you know, the impact of that. And it was encouraging to see, Joe, that the end of the MBS purchase program may not be the end of the mortgage market and these interest rate levels. So that's very encouraging.
Well, the market's pretty effective of factoring in all these things, and you know, you start looking out at trades that go beyond the end of March, and no real difference there, and everything seems to be working smoothly. So there will be one big buyer taken out of the market, but maybe a whole bunch of little buyers will come in and replace it.
Well, we appreciate you bringing this to us each week, Joe Farr. Hey, folks, if you had MBS Quote Line and getting that update every single day and intraday, it is so nice to get that little reminder what's going on. I don't know about you, but I get wrapped up in my busy day. I look forward to those little quotes that come in, Joe. Thank you so much for sending them out. I encourage you, to those of you that are not a part of MBS Quote Line, to get signed up with them. Very affordable service, considering some of the others out there. This is probably one of the most affordable, most up-to-date. And what I like about your approach to it, Joe, is you're not predicting interest rates. You're reporting the facts. So it's kind of like that Fox thing says, we report, you decide. So I like what you do and your approach to that. I think it's a smart move. Folks, we'll be right back after this brief word.
Looking for that competitive edge? MBS Quoteline delivers live market coverage for originators. Get up-to-the-minute mortgage market news and analysis as events occur.
Get MBS prices as trades happen.
Straight to your computer, email, cell phone, or PDA. Know in advance when your investors will reprice. Make better lock-float decisions and increase your income. Be the expert your clients expect. And know what's moving interest rates right now, tomorrow, and beyond. MBS Quoteline, delivering live market coverage for originators. Learn more about MBS Quoteline today at MBSQuoteLine.com.
MBSQuoteLine.com.
646-716-4972. The Lincoln on Lending Show is back. Here is your host, David Lincoln.
Welcome back. This is David Lincoln. We appreciate so much you being a part of listening to the program each week. And each week we bring you the latest, greatest, or not so greatest stuff going on in the world of legislative updates. Alice Alvey of Mortgage U, thank you so much for you and your team. And folks, I got to stress, it is her and her entire team is taking the time to digest all this. So, Alice, we always thank you, but you know, there's so many people you have behind the scenes there at your outstanding company, and we want to reach out and say thank you to all of them. What's up with legislative, the traffic report, Alice?
Yeah, the traffic report. Well, at least now we've got this big one we've got to watch because, as I think we're going to be covering in our hot topic today, we've got that there's finally a Senate companion bill that's out there to go with, or what was supposed to kind of align with, the House bill that had passed that we've been tracking for you. So in our hot topic, we're certainly going to talk about the fact that now that health care is passed, we're going to be, are we the focus? Is our industry the next focus? So from a legislative update for right now, it is that Senator Dodd has rolled out an over 1,300-page bill and we're not exactly pleased with how that rolled out. It seems like maybe the Republican voice wasn't in that as much as we had hoped, but it does look as though it is set to do everything that it has been they've been trying to put on the table. So bar banks and bank holding companies and their affiliates and subsidiaries from engaging in any high-risk speculation involving any stock, bond, option, commodity, derivative. So really trying to tighten down what the big banks are allowed to do. And it requires large, important non-bank financial institutions to set aside more capital. It prohibits securities brokers from betting against packages of loans. And we're really looking at getting another regulator. You know, who is this regulator going to be? And all the authority and the scope of the authority is still to kind of drill out of the law. So we'll certainly in future programs be drilling more into the details of that 1,300 pages. But for our update right now, we have that Senate bill now on the table for everybody to begin digesting. Also on the legislative calendar that we're watching is that there is nothing new yet on the SAFE Act for bank originators to be included in the loan officer licensing law. That was a rule out there that we're still monitoring. We also have a proposed rule with its comment period closed for Reg Z changes. Those are there's some big changes being proposed for Regulation Z to really change, mostly impacting ARMs and disclosure of ARMs and the calculation of amount financed being changed, which will really push up the APRs, the proposal to include all closing costs in that APR calculation. So that's a Regulation Z proposal. The comment period is closed, and we're just waiting to hear feedback on what form of that may turn into a final rule. That's the one that addresses loan officer compensation. And, you know, in today's new environment, I'm not sure what's going to happen with that. We're hoping that comes off the table. Also, FHA lender approval requirements, that was a proposed rule that has not hit a final rule stage yet. We do know that Commissioner Stevens has come right out and said that, you know, brokers, you don't have to renew yet. They actually gave a 30-day extension for audited financials. You know, but technically, all the FHA lender approvals have not changed. The requirements have not changed technically yet. We're still waiting to see what's that final rule going to say so we all know how to move forward with the new world of FHA lender approvals. So at the moment, those are the biggest things that we're watching. We do, one last final proposed rule that we actually may be able, actually assisting HUD with this. HUD is assessing in the SAFE Act proposed rule that they have more authority in trying to implement and oversee the SAFE Act requirements. So we'll be watching that proposed rule for you. That comment period closed out last week.
There's so much going on with FHA and especially with the losses going on. Last week I posted an article on the Mortgage News Clips blog and I received a lot of feedback from that. And the article was entitled Mortgage Lenders, Ignorance is Not a Defense. And I think that's one of the reasons we bring this program to you each week, listeners, is to make sure that you are not ignorant of what's going on. That's there. The LOA comp legislation, Alice, in light of the latest intrusion of the federal government into private industry as the healthcare, that is something of real concern to so many people. Any feel which way this thing's going to be heading one way or another based on you and your staff's reviewing all of that?
You know, right now, you know as well as I do, Dave, there's just so much just opinion out there, and we really, I think they're going to have to focus on the Senate bill that's just been proposed. The loan officer compensation is not in that, so they don't have to worry about it at that level. So what we're watching for everybody is in the rules process. Are they going to try and push something in there? I don't know. My inclination is they really want some ARM changes and some of the other things that are in that Reg Z piece, and they may have to give that part up, but we'll wait and see. Somebody's got to, you know, really fight that battle, I think, to say, look, don't try and regulate any industry down to the compensation of its employees.
Yeah, we hope they don't, but based on current trends within our federal government, them getting further and further into our businesses is something of concern and a reason for worry. Alice, thank you so much again, Alice Alvey, for bringing us all of this hot current information. We look forward to carrying this on. Now, one to hot discussion point of now that healthcare is behind us, almost sort of. What does it mean? And we're going to be talking about in the final segment. So stay tuned. We have a guest that's coming up in the next segment, Bruce Carr, mortgage, Michigan Mutual. I'm thinking of the mortgage, all this going. We're going to talk about mortgaging. We're talking then in the next segment about hedging and making the transition from best efforts to mandatory. We've got a guest who's lived the journey not once, but several times. We can't wait to have you listen in on this next segment. Stay tuned. We'll be right back after this quick break.
Looking for a full-service mortgage training and consulting company to fit exactly what you need? Mortgage U is your ultimate education and information resource used by lenders to execute high-impact, high-quality training throughout the organization. Mortgage U instructors are mortgage professionals
providing classroom and web-based delivery
and has the most sought-after training manuals in the country. Mortgage U has a proven track record performing customized training programs for hundreds and even thousands of employees both live and online on everything from application through loan delivery and insuring. Call Mortgage U today at 800-278-0200 or visit us online at mortgage-u.com. Welcome back to Lincoln on Lending. Our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here's David Lincoln.
Welcome back. This is David Lincoln, and we are honored to have as our guest, special guest, Bruce Carr, CPA and mortgage banker par excellence. I mean, this guy knows mortgage banking. He's been in it since, I'd say since diapers, because his family was in the mortgage business before him. Bruce, welcome to the program.
Hey, David, thank you so much. Actually, I'm real excited to talk about something that I'm passionate about today and share with your listeners.
That's good, and that is something a lot of people are looking, Bruce, to make that transition from best efforts to mandatory as volumes drop off. And last week we had Tom Malone, president of Capital Markets Cooperative, go on and do a good job of outlining for our listeners, laying down of who should, when should you, what volume levels. Today we want to focus in on someone that's actually lived the journey, and you've done it where Michigan Mutual's made that transition, but also in some former lives, as we say, you have done that. Give us a little background on your experience of making that transition with the companies that you've been at. And by the way, before you go there, I want to say a special thanks to Mark Walker and Vince Parlov, the senior management team there at Michigan Mutual, for letting you join our program. Let's take a couple of minutes away from your busy day to join us. So explain to us what is involved from the user standpoint in making that transition.
Yeah, you know, I think, you know, one of the things, and I think it was great that you guys had Tom Milan on and to talk about, you know, from his aspect and the volume and stuff like that. So once you've gone through, you know, the volume assessment, you know, are you doing enough volume? You know, I don't know what his number was. Mine would be, you know, $10 million a month that you're doing.
Yeah, that's about where he was. He was somewhere from about 120 to, you know, $180 million a month, a year.
So we're in the same ballpark. So, you know, once you've done that assessment, and once you've carved out that you can make the transition, I think you need to look at, you know, how are you doing business today, and do you have control over the lock policies and over the secondary marketing department? And I guess what I mean by that is, you know, if you're a retail shop, do you have all of your salespeople just locking directly into your investors?
Yeah.
If you do, you need to be able to pull that in-house. I mean, you need to be able to funnel that through one department because you need to have control of it, because ultimately that secondary department, or if you outsource it with a firm like with Capital Markets or the others that are out there, it needs to go through one area, and your loan officers are not going to be talking directly with the investors.
Hey, Bruce, this is Joe. I wondered what is the reaction among the loan officers in this transition? Is it favorable, unfavorable? I know they should pick up a little better price, but they might have to change a little bit about what they do.
Yeah, Joe, I think a great question, and I think it all depends on how you implement it. And, you know, going through it and knowing others that have gone through it, I think, you know, their initial reaction is not necessarily – real positive because you're taking away some control. And you know, and salespeople by nature love that kind of control. But if you spend time going out there and meeting with the sales force and explaining exactly what's going to happen and why, and letting them know how they're going to get their answers resolved, who are the key people within the organization to answer it, I think it can be a smooth transition. But you really do need to invest a lot of time in working with your sales force and explaining what is going on and why this, is this better for the organization and better for them. So, a great question. I think that's a big key in making this thing a productive transfer from a best efforts to a mandatory type of transfer.
And I want to underscore one thing that you said, and that's the getting control of your lock desk. For those that have tried to do this effectively, the key is we're going to be talking next week. We've got Rob Katz of Del Mar Database coming on talking about the importance of data. That's something Tom stressed. You hit on it. You're just, I don't know if you listened to last week's program, but you're right in cue and in step with exactly what everyone's been saying, and we're going to be going a lot more into it. Alice, I know there's a lot of operational issues that you have seen in looking at companies make that transition. Do you have any questions for Bruce on the operational front?
Well, yeah, I think, Bruce, I think it would be helpful if people could understand, the big difference post-underwriting, what really changes in your post-closing and your loan delivery operation when you make this change.
Yeah, great question, Alice. I think you have to make sure that your back office and, your call post-closing, your loan delivery, your funding area needs to be in real strong shape. What does that mean? That means, if you're delivering now to to your investors and you're not running into a lot of problems, everybody gets steps, in some conditions. But are you getting your loan through them in a quick time frame? Are you getting an excessive amount of steps? Most of the large institutions now have comparisons and can tell you what kind of back shop that you have. But that needs to run smoothly, because when you transition from a best efforts to mandatory, time is money. And the faster you are at getting your loans funded, the more money the organizations will make. And because if you take an excessive period of time and you have to roll trades out from, April trades out to May because you can't get it funded by the investor time frame, that's going to cost you money. So it's key to have, a good organized back office that, is getting strong, good packages that are complete from closing, and you're not having to go back and get various things. The other thing that's real key is making sure that you are delivering, from an underwriting standpoint, the right programs with that investor. As we all know, various investors have little quirks about them. And, B of A may take something a little bit different than Wells or Citi or Chase. And so you need to really be up to speed and either have somebody or some way of organizing that, and to know that this product can, go to that specific investor, or, you set up programs that can go to all investors and it can get sold anywhere. And that's important to communicate that, through your data, whether it's to your hedging firm or to your secondary marketing department, they need to know that information. So there needs to be really strong communication between underwriting, secondary, post-closing, because if you end up delivering a loan to the wrong place and they won't buy it, it could be a great loan. It could be nothing, fundamentally wrong with the loan, but that investor just doesn't take it and the market moves away from you. Again, that costs you money with time to go out longer, and will cost you money in having to pull it back and go elsewhere. So, you need
That's
to have
good
organizational skills. So.
Yeah, those organizational and operational areas, and boy, I tell you, Alice hit on a great point. What do you need to do operationally to be ready in your shipping operation? Understanding that risk is just so important. One of the questions that just came into us from one of our listeners was just sent in to me was this. Is the motivation to move just financial is that the best motivation and should be the one that everyone should make this move on, or are there other motivations that a company should keep in mind or have for making the transition from best efforts to mandatory? How would you respond to that?
Yeah, I think good question from the listener. I think certainly a pricing is a key component and probably gets people to perk up and pay attention and can be a big benefit to the bottom line or a big benefit to pricing on the street, however the organization chooses to, you know, to share in that. That is a big component of it. But as organizations get bigger, it gets more difficult to deliver loans, onesies, twosies,
yeah,
to, you know, 10 different investors. And so you actually can gain organizational efficiencies by streamlining those operations, by turning it into one process and delivering out, you know, millions of dollars at a time and getting them funded and working through really a more systematic approach. So you do get the price benefit. I think that, you know, that's usually why people are looking at it. But I will say, in my experiences, it was easier. You can operate with less people and in a more efficient way and get the loans funded faster, which also can help turn your warehouse line if you have limited capacity in your warehouse credit limits. That's the other thing is you can, you know, if you get this thing really rolling, it can even open up some
opportunities
there.
I was hoping you were going to touch on that because it should, if you're doing this properly, I mean, a great motivation is the added income that should be dropping to the bottom line, and Tom covered some of that it could be as little as 20 basis points, but in this last year, man, we were seeing some companies earning 180 basis points for being involved, so that was it. But another one, when your warehouse lines get, another reason to do this, to make this transition, is if your warehouse lines start getting clogged up because you have enough volume going through it, or you've been cut back on the amount of warehouse lending you have, that you are able to turn that loan or that line more frequently and therefore increase your funding capacity. Joe, I know you knew Bruce from back in the old Homestead Mortgage days, and so I think there's a lot of history here between the two of you. And have you seen a lot of companies try to make this transition? Are all of them making it successfully, Joe?
Well, first I'd like to say, you know, Bruce was back hedging the risk of a fairly, you know, a big pipeline of loans for his family. Can you imagine the pressure for that?
Yeah, the pressure one thing is to do it for a company, but do it for a family. No kidding.
I tell you, Christmas was a little light a couple of years. You know, you learned how to be good at it. So.
Oh, geez. Bruce, I'd like to ask if the conversion from best efforts to mandatory is it like a two-step process with step one kind of being, let's just start delivering whole loans on a mandatory basis, and step two maybe being, let's start considering issuing securities, hedging the securities with future, with forwards and things like that?
You know, good question, in fact. You know, and it's been a number of years because actually we started doing this with Homestead back in 92. And as some of these programs and opportunities grew up, and that's exactly how we started. And you can do it multiple ways. I mean, it depends on the expertise that you have in your organization or that you want to align yourself. But we did do it in a two-step process, and we did it where, you know, loans that basically floated to close, we started delivering mandatory and go that way. And so we took it, you know, we got comfortable with the process, we got organized, and then, you know, we rolled in kind of the rest of the products and particularly the longer-term locks that were out there. And then, you know, kind of through all the programs. So you could start it with that. You could start it with, you know, a certain product line if you only have one that you want to do. The challenge becomes is you don't want to take on the interest rate risk on the loan. So you don't want to have people locking in with the organization, certainly to any large extent, and then not covering them at all in some sort of coverage. Now, if they float the close and they're closing, you can take your mandatory coverage out and get the better improvement in the price execution. You know, that's great. So, you know, you can kind of walk before you run a little bit. but you do need to have enough volume that you're, you know, that you're going, if you're going to make the transition into hedging, you do need to have enough volume to be able to hedge, you know, virtually every day and go out there and cover the new pipeline of loans that are coming in and, you know, and take off the loans that are falling off the off of it. But, no, you can do that. Go ahead.
I was going to say, you said a mouthful, Bruce, about the pipeline, because I remember very clearly at a former employer, you know, of too big of a commitment taken down, and now I've got that they're looking at loans that haven't even closed yet to try and fill, you know, a commitment that's due, and we're not even sure of the quality of those loans. So, you know, I'm going to, you know, from an operations standpoint, you know, I'm going to say you've got to make sure you've got a good, solid, closed pipeline you can work with and not ever step into that live animal to try and fill the pool.
You do, and that's a, you know, and that's a, you know, a, I guess an agreement that your operations and your secondary group has to come into an agreement on, because, you know, as I said earlier, time is money, and, you know, so you do want to try to get them out as quickly as possible. But at the same time, you don't want to have a lot of loans that are falling out that either never close or you have issues with that, you know, you need, they just need some time to be cleaned up in your shop. It happens to everybody. I mean, we get loans that, you know, fall out, but we try to cut it, you know, in a reasonable period of time where, you know, the majority of the pipeline is closed. It's, you know, good quality and we can ship it out. I mean, our goal, we want everything shipped out within really 4 days from when we allocate. So we'll do millions of dollars and then we want it shipped out. And I will say, in today's technical world with, you know, image files and stuff like that, we are able to ship so much faster today than we would in the old days with all the paper files. So not to, you know, jump on a different thing, but it, you know, that does help with this. Yeah, technology has helped with this execution and being able to deliver and deliver more consistently than I think we have in the past.
Do you have a system you recommend? I mean, I think that's a big issue for some of these companies is whether their system can handle it. You know, if they've grown up on Calyx, so to speak.
Yeah, I mean, if you know, and I'm not, you know, here to bash on Calyx, but you need some sort of centralized system that you have good data. I know Delmar, we weren't a user of them, but what I have seen their product, and they have an excellent platform in which that they can, you know, use. There's others that are out there, but it, you need to make sure that you have good, a good central database that everybody's working from, and that, you know, this branch doesn't have different information than the home office, because when you have that, then you're going to have difficulty delivering. And you should already know those things. I mean, if you're going, as companies are going through the evaluation, I mean, you know, the price and the price improvements, you know, catches everybody's eye. And so that's great. Okay, now I'm interested, and I agree with those numbers. I mean, we're seeing 35 to 50 basis points on conventionals, 50 to 70 on government. But then you do need to look at your operational efficiency. You know, what do your investors say about you? Do you take longer than their averages to deliver and fund loans?
Yeah.
Are you getting a lot of STIPs coming back? They can help you with that. Help you with that process. They can help, you know, partner up with these guys. There's a lot of expertise, you know, within their organizations and outside of their organizations, and you know they want business, you know, just like you want to do business with them. And so, you know, where you have, you know, if you think that you have some deficiencies, then, you know, talk to some organizations. David, you might even supply some services that
yep.
can help companies, you know, go out there and do self-evaluations on, you know, are they, you know, can they get more efficient? But it is key. You need good data in the systems. You need good communication between your underwriting, closing, and post-closing personnel. And you need to be able to deliver relatively efficiently to really utilize, you know, the price benefits, because if you don't, then you're going to be paying for that in the long run. So it may not be as economical as, you know, you maybe planned it was.
As someone who's actually done this, talk about the additional relationships you have to have. You have to have accounts with various dealers out there to take certain positions in the market. Could you get into a little bit of what are some of the different relationships you need that they may not have already?
Yeah, no, that good question. You're going to your point, and I'll segue from what you just said. You do have to set up broker dealer relationships if you get into where you're hedging. And what that means is you're going to sign up credit lines, just kind of like you would a warehouse bank. You're going to have to go through their credit department, and they're going to give you a credit line. You know, could be $10 million, $20 million with those, you know, various, you know, Wall Street firms or regional broker dealers that are trading mortgage-backed security. It's not typically your local stockbroker guy because there are specific desks that just trade mortgage-backed securities. And, you know, what we're all doing here is we're selling in advance the loans in large buckets to the broker dealers. The broker dealers, in turn, are turning around and taking what we're selling and, you know, finding people that want to buy them, whether it's insurance companies or, you know, mutual funds or whatnot. So you need to set up, you know, credit lines with them. Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, if companies, organizations are approved with them, offer good lines, and they'll even, some of them, I know Fannie will trade even, you know, Ginnie Mae securities. So it doesn't just have to be Fannie or Freddie trades. There's regional firms that are out there that you can get signed up with, particularly if you're smaller, which supply some, you know, great opportunity. I know, you know, we have some relationships with a company called Bank of Oklahoma that, you know, is a very nice organization, Mesero, company called MBS, Multibank Securities, that do a nice job. And then there's the large guys, which, you know, we do some business with. You know, there's First Boston Credit Suisse, and, you know, Bank of America has a securities, Deutsche Bank. So, you know, the larger guys like, you know, higher net worth. The smaller guys, you know, just what you think, they'll deal with, you know, smaller firms. The agencies, you know, are very good. The new thing that's coming on board, though, is some of the regional guys, if you do have some smaller net worth, it may require margin. Not all of them do.
Margin accounts, yeah.
Yeah, which just means that what they want is money held with their organization, and they're looking at the price of the trades that you have on with them versus where the market is. And they want to make sure if there's losses that there's money held on. Not all of them require it, but, you know,
yeah, but
you might be prepared to do that. Go ahead.
There's no question that's a growing trend. Any idea the dollar amounts that are being held in these margin accounts, these with each of these various broker-dealers?
Yeah, just a rough rule of thumb, it would be 1.5% of the really outstanding line of credit that you guys have. So, you know, if you wanted a $10 million line of credit, they might require $150,000 out there. You can invest it in CDs, so you can, you know, not that anybody's getting a great return on investment vehicles these days, particularly short-term safe ones.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. But, you know, but it's not without getting, you know, something. But you might just be prepared that you may have to do that. Candidly, if you are, you know, if company organization is a good candidate for it, you will more than offset that money that you have to have tied up. But you might be prepared that you have to do it. So, you know, you have to have, anyway, you have to have those, you know, broker-dealer. You need to really be, have a investor relationship, and I'd suggest at least more than, you know, at least two, more than one, with the large aggregators. And, you know, B of A, Wells, Citi, GMAC, and then Chase on the retail side. Chase is an excellent company to do business with if you're already, you know, doing business with them. You know, they just, we do a lot of third-party business, so it's not a good fit for us. But so, you know, if you have those relationships already, then you should talk to your account exec. Sometimes there are different account execs that that work specifically with this type of program. So, you know, you may end up having to work through that in their organization. You had a question?
Yeah, and there's Yeah, I was going to say, there's channel conflicts. Sometimes those, you may move from a best efforts desk or the group that you have been working with, and you do have to move to a different part of the group. And there can be pushback from those who are managing the relationship right now. So don't be surprised if you go to make that transition and you find your rep going, oh, why would you want to leave us? We do such a great job, and we're here to serve you, and you're going to have more risk, and they'll try to scare you a little bit away from that. At least that's been our experience.
Yeah, no, and I didn't know who was on the call, but very, very well said. And you do, you can get that in some organizations, not all, and
you can work
through it. And typically, if it's in the best interest of the client, you know, it all works itself out.
We've got a number of the institutions that listen to us. Every time I talk to one of them, I'm encouraging knock down channel conflict within your organization. It's so critical that we avoid channel conflict to keep your clients wrapped up in a good, solid relationship. We're going to take a quick break, Bruce, and we're going to have you back in the next segment. We're going to continue this discussion. Folks, stay tuned for more discussion with Bruce Carr of Michigan Mutual. We're going to be back with you in just a minute after this quick break.
Mortgage Banking Solutions is the preeminent management consulting firm to the residential mortgage lending industry. No other firm in the U.S. offers the menu of services or the level of expertise to the industry.
Whether you need a new warehouse line or making the transition from broker to banker, are interested in mergers and acquisitions,
or anything in between, Mortgage Banking Solutions' primary focus is to enable executives to take their business to the next level and guide them down a path towards success and profitability. With over 300 combined years of experience in all facets of mortgage lending, the Mortgage Banking Solutions team of professionals has the expertise and know-how to help you accomplish your goals. New warehouse lines of credit,
broker to banker transitions, transitioning to hedging, financial and accounting services, or meeting your capitalization needs.
If you need help with these or any other aspects of your business, please contact a Mortgage Banking Solutions sales team to see how we can help you at 512-977-9900. That's 512-977-9900. Mortgage Banking Solutions. Enabling executives to take their business to the next level.
Welcome back. This is Dave Licken, and we have a special guest, Bruce Carr with Michigan Mutual, talking about how he made the transition from best efforts to mandatory and hedging and all that's involved. Bruce, again, thank you so much for joining the program today. Alice, there are a lot of operational issues that need to be taken into consideration. Quality control, knowing the quality of your loans is one of them, is it not?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, like Bruce has alluded to, you've really just got to make sure your operation from the beginning to end, you know, including, you know, you can see already how it impacts the loan officers, even to the point of now having to have a centralized, you know, rate desk. You know, it impacts everything. And so QC certainly has to be something that's managed properly, you're getting your reports done, you're responding to your reports, so you know, you have to look at those QC reports are going to help you make sure you're delivering better loans
right,
that you're not going to have kickback problems with.
Yeah, quality of originations. I think one of the things, Bruce, I want to talk about is one of the things I want to go to, AOTs versus securities versus just dealing with the mandatory desk at the various aggregators, one of the big banks. I want to ask about that in a minute. But one of the things that we're seeing is a lot of people calling us, as you all know that have listened to the program for any amount of time, we do a lot of helping companies make the transition from selling to the aggregators to Fannie, getting approved of Fannie and Freddie and Jenny Mae. What I'm finding as an alarming trend is the rationale why some people, Bruce, want to get approved of Jenny Mae. It's so they can, quote, unquote, be able to do the lower credit tranches, those loans that technically have been reported to be able to get done through HUD, but are outside the boundaries of the big banks, the large correspondents, the Wells, the B of A's. And so in many aspects, with having that as a rationale, they're adversely selecting themselves to take on a higher grade of risk. And that is something that I really caution people on. You got any comments on that as to what type of product should go into a mandatory position?
Yeah, well, when you say mandatory, I mean, you can have mandatory that delivered to the agencies, but then you're talking about your clients that want to get in with Ginnie Mae, I mean, I can only tell you from, you know, what I would want in my organization, I mean, I would almost prefer it the other way. I'd rather keep the higher quality stuff and you know, and sell the other stuff
exactly
away.
Right.
And because there's comparisons, I mean, every, you know, our industry is getting looked at 18 different ways right now. And the our business partners, your investors, our investors look at us. And, you know, we're looking at the people that I said earlier that we do a lot of TPO business. So, you know, we're looking at the people that deliver to us. We also do a lot of IHA. So we're looking at compare ratios. From a Ginnie Mae standpoint, they look at, they have a quality rating on the Ginnie Mae's that you have that you're servicing. And they have, you know, I think it's Q1 and Q2. But so they take a look at you know, what your delinquency rates are with the Ginnie Mae's. And unlike HUD that compares them in the local markets, it's across the country. So if you're in a area, you know, I'm sitting here in Michigan, so not exactly known for, you know, outstanding delinquency ratios these days, you know, and we're delivering product. We're getting compared to, you know, places out in Utah or, you know, out in, you know, D.C. area and Virginia and Maryland where maybe the economies haven't had as many speed bumps or as many craters as we've had. So I would caution anybody, if that's their plan of attack, I would really maybe take a second look because that could be a short window. And Ginnie Mae is looking at it very closely on the quality that of the companies that are, you know, delivering to them. So
such a good point. We talked about data, the importance of data. Joe Farr has a company, as you know, your guys are a customer of MBS Quote Line, that provides a lot of market data. Joe, how are you hearing or how are you seeing a number of people or a number of your clients that are using your services, such as Michigan Mutual, to monitor the markets? And is this something that's more important than ever?
Well, Dave, everybody in the mortgage origination side of the industry ought to know what's going on with mortgage rates and MBS prices throughout the day. From a secondary perspective, there are price changes happening every day, all day long, and all of those price changes can impact what your expectations are for pull-through. And Bruce, I was going to bring up one of the phrases I grew up with, and I'm sure we've all heard it, is that secondary marketing is an art, not a science. Even though you have reams of paper and data and all that, it's still an art.
That's a good statement.
What is the pull-through rate going to be? Would you agree with that?
I would wholeheartedly agree with that, Joe. And because it really gets into, you know, if you don't know what your pull-through rate, and there is, you're going to look at tons and tons of data to try to do a prediction. But, you know, my pull-through rate next month, you know, as best as, you know, we can go, we'll get close, but we're not going to get it exactly. So to your point, you know, we're always kind of massaging and trying to figure out, you know, exactly what percentage of loans that we're going to have delivered anymore. And so that's, you know, real important. And anymore, not only do you need to know what loans that you're delivering and how many of them, but even in what interest rate buckets to know, do you have the proper coverage on? And the large aggregators are changing almost daily the value of the servicing, because as, you know, interest rates rally and rates go down, they're going to decrease, certainly in the higher coupons, some of the servicing values. So, you know, it is science, a combination of science and art, and you need to have good data, good market data, you know, all the time, because as that changes, you may be making intraday decisions on how much coverage that you want based on your locks and what's happening, or if you're expecting rates to, if you see rates that are increasing a lot where the market's going, I mean, you may not expect as many loans to close in your existing pipeline that you've already had locked in. So, you know, that's all key, but it's a lot, you know, it's a combination of science and art out there.
And isn't that what some of these other companies do to help you with, you know, is to help you analyze that data, you know, that you don't necessarily have to go it alone. You can hire somebody with experience to help you with those decisions.
Yeah, Alice, great point. And I would not suggest anybody learning it through trial and error. I mean, everybody eventually learns how to do it. When I got in the business, we actually, I had an acquaintance of ours that had done it, and we learned from him. There weren't these organizations, but you need to go one of two routes. You either need to align yourself up with a firms that are out there that will do the hedging, that will do a good fallout analysis with you. Some of them will even go in where they'll allocate out the loans for you and tell you what investors, and they'll put all your organization's information in it and do all that on your behalf. Or you need to hire somebody that really has a very strong background in that, you know, in doing secondary marketing and doing hedging. I would not suggest anybody just try to figure it out on their own, because it'll be a very expensive mistake if they try to, you know, because, you know, it's the only way to learn.
That's a great statement. Do not try to do this on your own. In fact, more increasing number of warehouse lenders, as Tom Milan pointed out last week, are now requiring someone getting into this for the first time to work with a hedging firm similar to or like Capital Markets Cooperative. And there's a number of them out there. Like you said, when you started doing this, you didn't have any choice but to hire someone who had the experience and work with them and watch how they did it. So it was a scarier proposition to get started. Today, that's not the case. There's a number of companies out there that you can work with that will help you through that process. Folks, we'll be right back after this quick break. Bruce, stay on the line. We want you to be involved in our next discussion, which has to do with some of the regulations. What can we anticipate now that health care has been passed?
In today's climate, quality counts more than ever, and Wetzel's Trot can help your company maintain the quality that you require to survive in an ever-changing market. With over 450 customers across the country, Wetzel's Trot has specialized in quality control reviews for residential lenders since 1985. Wetzel's Trot can assist your organization in maintaining a high standard of quality within your residential mortgage operation. They offer a wide variety of services, including loan quality control, servicing quality control, quality control plans, fraud review services, and even web-based quality control software. Quality is never an accident. It is always the result of high intention, sincere effort, intelligent direction, and skillful execution. Choosing Wetzel's Trot represents the wise choice of many alternatives. Contact Wetzel's Trot today for details at 248-592-2252. Wetzel's Trot, the single source solution for your quality control needs. And now, broadcasting live from Austin, Texas, we're back with the Lickin' on Lending Show.
Welcome back, Dave Lickin. Special note goes up to Andy Albee, who produces this program for us each week. He's responsible for each one of these advertising spots. If you're listening to this and say you'd like to get your ad heard on Lickin' on Lending, please contact us. We'd love to have you on here and advertising. Bruce Carr is with us again as a special guest. And we're talking about the topic of hedging. We have been talking about it. Next week, we've got Rob's Katz coming on with Del Mar Database. We're going to talk about the importance of data. One of the things that you've said repeatedly, Joe said it, Alice said it, we're all talking about one thing, the number one reoccurring theme, you've got to have good data. You got to know you have good controls in business. Your business got the right volume levels, but data, data, data. Man, it's so important. And one of the data elements that's out there that's changing in their industry, Bruce, that Alice and Joe and I are talking about with our listeners each week, is the changing climate in the regulatory world. We have just watched history being made by the fact that the House last night passed with 219 votes the overhaul of the health care system. It's an intrusion into the private enterprise. It's unprecedented. And I'll be doing some posts on mortgage news clips on that. I encourage you to take a look at my comments. But the number one thing that I'm hearing the newscasters say is now that this has been passed, we're going to see the regulators, especially this administration, Obama administration, turn their whole focus over to the financial services industry, of which the mortgage industry is such a big part of it. Alice, let's get into a discussion. And Bruce, we welcome you to join in on this. Alice, help our listeners understand the climatery change. I mean, I know we do the traffic report each week, but just back up and look at this thing from a 40,000 feet change. We've never seen anything like this in our industry, have we? I'm at this for 37 years, and I know you've been at it a long, long time.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, like you said, if you take a step back and you watch that we've already been through the Mortgage Disclosure Improvement Act at the end of last year, we're still trying to get to the bottom of RESPA, and people have some very legitimate things that they have concerns about with RESPA. But the new piece, so basically the Restoring American Financial Stability Act of 2010, that's the Senate version of the, you know, Wall Street reform bill we watched in the House. I'm sitting here, Dave, while we're on the phone looking at it. If you look at the column, it shows over 470 amendments now that are going to be attached to this thing. Now, even if you block off that 100 of them are useless, they're date extensions or placeholders, there's still a lot to try and digest in this bill. It's almost like they're taking this one bill and they're going to go after everything. I mean, as I'm looking through this, Joe, you'll be happy to hear there's a placeholder for covered bonds. Who knows what they're going to put in, but they talk about establishing minimum underwriting standards, provisions for trying to terminate Fannie and Freddie, you know, how to get financial reform of Wall Street off the ground. I mean, this is, they're trying to put everything in this. It's huge.
That's huge. I look at this from, and this is Senator Dodd that's spearheading a lot of this, is he not? Is it not?
Yeah. But there's certainly a lot of sponsors, co-sponsors on this. So the idea of trying to create another regulatory agency that's going to oversee, and then how much authority is left with the remaining agencies. And one of them in here is, you know, fiduciary to require the director of the FHA, the Federal Housing Finance Agency, to maintain a fiduciary duty to taxpayers. I mean, it's just striking language to really would cause a lockdown of our industry.
We've got a special guest with us, and I'd like to get Bruce's take on all this. As far as you guys are looking at this, what's your sense of what is going on, Bruce, and how are you guys preparing for it?
Well, we've been very engaged politically on this, because there's an aspect of that bill that Alice talked about called risk retention. And, you know, it's been anywhere from 5 to 10% on all transactions that people or organizations would have to keep as a reserve to have basically skin in the game, is maybe what you've heard it. Well, okay, we may, you know, some people may look at that and just say, hey, that doesn't apply to me. It applies to everybody in the chain.
Everybody.
It's not just people securitizing. So if, you know, I'm Bruce Carr Brokerage Shop, and I sell to Michigan Mutual, I got to have it. Michigan Mutual has it. If we turn around and sell to the large aggregators, even if we're not selling to Chase, and then, you know, or Chase or B of A or Wells or whoever, and then they have to have it. So there is all the reason to get involved with this politically, because some of it doesn't make sense, and there's a lot of organizations that are out there you know, trying to lobby and put amendments in and get carve-outs for, you know, simple things, just agency production, if it's Fannie, Freddie, or HUD. As it stands, you know, I'm not one usually that, you know, cries wolf and says that, you know, the sky's going to fall. But if it goes through, it will grind to almost a halt our industry, and you can only imagine what would be left for at home prices if they're, you know, you know, lending gets cut in half, or, you know, gets tripled to a quarter.
Yeah, we've got 1 minute left. Alice, go ahead, and we got about 1 minute is what our clock says here left.
Go ahead, Joe.
Give us.
I was just going to say, it sounds like the provision would be a big benefit for a very small number of our largest players, and I don't think anyone in the industry sees it as a benefit to have all the lending power concentrated. So it would be a big mistake.
Yeah, I hope not.
Big mistake. We hope it doesn't happen. Folks, we want to say thank you so much for staying tuned with us and tuning in each week and listening to the comments. We're here for you to help you digest a lot of the issues that are going on in the industry. Tell your friends about it. Come on, be back with us next week. We appreciate Bruce Carr, Michigan Mutual, for being with us. Bruce, it's been a pleasure. We hope to have you back again soon. Thank you so much, listeners. Stay tuned. We'll be back next week with special guest Rob Katz of Del Mar Database. Thank you so much. Have a great week, everybody.
Bye-bye.
This has been Lickin' on Lending, a week.
weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Licken of Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. On the web at www.mortgagebankingsolutions.com. Today's guests were Joe Farr from MBS Quoteline, delivering live mortgage-backed security prices as trades happen, and Alice Albee, President CMB of Mortgage U, your ultimate education and information resource. Come by next week, and thank you for listening.